The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Well, welcome back. As we head into Hour 2, I am Seth Leibson, 602-508-0960, 602-5089-60, your 10-digit barrier to entry. Young Mr. Dahl, what are you doing? What's fun? What do you got
on
the plan?
What did you do for this past weekend? Did you do anything to celebrate your not-so-Irish heritage?
I went running.
You went running?
Yeah. Yogi Berra was informed that the first president of Israel was from Ireland, and he said, only in America. Yeah.
I did not actually know that.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
You're talking about my Irish heritage.
Your Irish heritage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Should we go to calls? Let's go to calls.
We can do that.
We'll do that. Glenn is in Mesa. Hello, Glenn.
How are you, Seth?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Wasn't it Miss Jackson during her hearing that she couldn't define what a woman is?
Yes, she refused to do so. Marsha Blackburn on the Senate Judiciary Committee said, can you provide a definition for the word woman? And you remember what Jackson said? I'm not a biologist. She said, I'm not a biologist. Didn't ask her to define biology. She said she could not and would not do that. You have to think about it this way, Glenn. You've reached a certain level of political rhetoric, dialogue, and perhaps even evil in a way when you're so afraid of saying that lest it scuttle your chances to get on the Supreme Court. I mean, think about what's going on here. You have a liberal judge being nominated to the Supreme Court by a Democratic president. She's going to get every Democratic vote, no matter pretty much what she says. Absent a scandal, which, as far as we know, there are none in her background. Absent a scandal, she's going to get every vote. So it's really her job to maybe try and show some level of non-left-wing ideological rigidity to attract some Republican votes, let us say, or to look like she might be actually someone that represents, you know, legal understanding and scholarship. And she can't even say that because of the hardcore grab the left, the hardcore hold the left has on this ideology of liberal Supreme Court justices. It's really frightening. It's really frightening.
It is frightening. And now she's, I was astounded when I heard that this afternoon. I was astounded that she was advocating for government.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet we the people, governed by the people, for the people.
Yeah, she says she's worried that that the people suing the government are of the belief that the First Amendment should hamstring the government. That is exactly what the First Amendment was supposed to and meant to do. It's right there in the first few words. Congress shall make no law. She's worried about it hamstringing the government. She thinks the First Amendment is for the government. She thinks the First Amendment is for the government. And in her comments, she said, particularly in the case of a national emergency, which if anyone spends time reading the broad sweep of jurisprudence on the First Amendment, particularly with regard to free speech starting in the 1940s, starting in World War II forward, you will see that the broad sweep of the First Amendment is that we protect it even in times of national emergency. That's when it's most important. Constitutional rights don't matter much when they don't matter much.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
Yes, you're very welcome. And I guess we need a primer on the First Amendment. I guess this country's level of civic understanding is so poor, we need to be reminded, as the president needs to be reminded, of what kind of government we have here. He keeps talking about a democracy. He keeps quoting George Washington and the founders as speaking out for democracy. They don't. In fact, the Federalist Papers and Madison and Washington criticize the notion of democracy. They advocated for and designed a constitutional republic over and against a democracy. Are we a form of democracy? Yeah. But the idea that you just say the word democracy is precisely what concerned the founders so much, because it didn't, because democracies didn't protect the rights of the political minority. That's the problem with strict majoritarian rule without constitutional checks and balances and separations of powers. Strict majority rule becomes a tyranny of the majority. And that's exactly what the Biden administration seems to want. This is no slip of the tongue. This is no slip of the tongue when they talk about the political minority in this country being an extremist fringe that threatens democracy. When they weaponize the legal system and exploit the legal system to imprison or keep off the ballot their political opponents. That is the decimation of the political minority's rights. They think we should be or are in a democracy. We are not. We are in a constitutional republic that has a Bill of Rights that protects religious freedom and political speech, and the freedom of the press, not to be coerced into saying and believing things you don't want to say or believe. That is the point. That is how we elect people in this country. If this sounds basic, I will go back to George Orwell yet again. 5 years before he wrote Politics in the English Language, he wrote a review of a book where he said, "We have reached the point where the first duty of the intelligent is to restate the obvious." I thought it was obvious that we reach public policy decisions in this country through argument and debate. That's how I thought we did it here. That's why I thought we had elections. We hear arguments and we hear debates. Maybe we take in some advertising. Maybe we take in some op-eds. Maybe we take in some commentary from political experts. Maybe we take that all in when we go to the ballot box, because we have a free speech here that allows it to let her rip so that all sides can be heard and the best ideas will be deployed and implemented at the ballot box. That's how we do it here. It's the First Amendment that allows for that. And though you are not in control, because your party is not the governing party or the majority party, you have the exact same rights as those in the majority. Because majorities in a constitutional republic are to be temporary. They cannot ever be temporary and will ever be permanent so long as you have a tyranny of the majority, which is clearly what Joe Biden and Ketanji Brown Jackson want. And it's the misunderstanding of civics that lets them get away with it as much as it mandates that they can say it. I'll be right back. No, I won't be right back.
But I'll be sticking around.
Why
for
is
three
my
more
clock
minutes.
So off today? How did that happen?
Couldn't tell you.
All right. Well, let's go.
We got a new blue clock.
Yeah.
Is it already failing?
Well,
you?
Then let's go to Smitty. Hi, Smitty.
Hello there, buddy. How are you?
Good. Now you know what the fourth valve does on a flugelhorn.
Yes, I do.
Smitty came up to me at a reception. Smitty is a longtime listener. He comes up to me at a reception. He says, "I only have one question for you." And I'm thinking, oh gosh, don't be brain dead, don't be brain dead. He goes, "What is the fourth valve on a flugelhorn for?" Right?
Right. Now I know.
Now you know. Keeps the D note in tune. For the rest of the people, it keeps the D note in tune. Go ahead, sir.
Okay. Yeah, we don't need to rewrite the Constitution. We have to reread it.
Yeah.
But anyway, my call is about the CIA. Couple things. Trump was asked if he would release all the papers on the JFK assassination, and he said no, because if you saw what I saw, you wouldn't release it either.
I heard that.
And there's rumor around that the CIA was involved in offing JFK for a variety of reasons. And some have said that's what led to Schumer suggesting you don't mess with the intelligence apparatus.
They have 1,000 ways to get you or something like that, he said, I think. Yeah,
exactly. So we find, you know, that actually the Russia hoax was initiated by the CIA with the approval of Obama, And now we have Obama off at 10 Downing Street today.
Is Obama in England today?
Obama is in London at 10 Downing Street.
Okay.
For what reason, we could only imagine.
Maybe to talk about British exceptionalism.
I think more to get their story straight on the CIA's involvement in Russiagate. And then we have documentation inadvertently released under a FOIA showing the CIA had boots on the ground January 6th.
I'm going to tell you something. You know, the longer you live in this country, the more you realize that the government keeps more and more from you. And the more you realize that, the more you realize they don't really need to. They don't really need to be doing this. We can handle it. We can handle it. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, 602-508-0960. I was just going through my Twix feed, and I keep getting an ad for an upcoming concert in California that Wayne Newton's going to be doing a show.
Wayne Newton?
81.
Mr. Las Vegas.
81, yeah. And they have him playing the fiddle or the violin, and they have him playing guitar. It's amazing to me.
So what day is it? Because I need to know what day to take off of work.
Yeah, okay. You don't have to. It's Saturday, March 30th.
Ah, perfect.
Yeah. San Juan Capistrano. It is amazing how much talent was in that guy's fingernail. If you go back to his even younger days, he can play every instrument well. I mean, well. He can play brass. He can play horns. He can play violin. He can play piano. He can sing. And I just love the joy you see in his face and in his life. You can see sometimes someone's insides through their outsides. You sometimes can. You sometimes can. And if you've ever heard him interviewed, he did a long-form interview with Adam Carolla about 7 months ago. Do you remember it? It's a great interview. It's a great American story. And the guy is full of joy, full of the joy of life.
I've got to listen to this.
You've got to listen to it. It's really fun.
Something of a Wayne Newton fan.
Yeah.
Except for his Christmas music.
Yeah. A lot of people will remember him from here. As a young boy, he was, you know, a star here in Phoenix. And anyway, why was I talking about that? The feed just
came
through.
Because we're going on a guy's trip.
Huh?
Because we're going on a guy's trip.
No,
we're going to take Dagny. We're going to go see Wayne Newton.
I guess that plus the Trini Lopez coming in, it just made me think of Wayne Newton. Plus this ad keeps popping up on my Twitter feed. But... can I go back to something I was speaking about with Smitty? And it relates to the Supreme Court argument today. It relates to the idea of people being allowed to express their opinions on matters of important concern. First of all, let's revive the idea that the First Amendment's freedoms don't apply most over things of small concern. You know, they should apply about things of large concern. How to handle a public health crisis, for example. How to handle a political crisis, for example. How to handle a debate or an election, for example. These are the very kinds of things that the American people are supposed to be entrusted with, not only to make informed decisions and so that they can make informed decisions, but that so we can draw from the very best brains and the very best thoughts and the very, very best expertise to help us be informed on those decisions. So, Mr. Bill, you went through COVID with me probably more jointly than anyone. I mean, I think we saw each other almost every day, except when... Well, I think we did. I think we saw each other every day during COVID, except for weekends. And you and I were very much looking at the same stuff. And Hallman helped out and Jasser helped out and some others, but more than helped out. I didn't mean to get that short shrift. But when you think about all that censorship we went through, never mind the kinds of stuff that real people like Scott Atlas had to go through. Do you remember the entire faculty giving him a vote of no confidence at Stanford because of his positions on COVID, or what Jay Bhattacharya went through, or what the Barrington people went through? All those things. Okay, so 1.2 million Americans died with or from COVID. Mr. Bill. 1.2 million Americans died from or with COVID. Ignore that we know the ages and ignore what we know about the comorbidities. Do you think, outside of what I think we all now agree with having to do with ventilators, do you think anything that was done kept those numbers as low as 1.2 million? I don't. So the reason I raise that is because not only were people censored and shamed, but the fundamental rule that I have and pet peeve that I have about public policy in this country is that we always seem to be paying the most attention and spending the most amount of time, but more importantly, money on things that didn't have to be, on mistakes that didn't have to be made. That if there were only people that said X, you wouldn't have to pay for Y. But there were people that said X. So the people that now want to pay for Y say, well, everybody got it wrong, or perhaps we just didn't all know at the time. And it's not true. It's simply not true. It's that they were silenced and shamed, those who had a different point of view and knew better. With a natural and healthy inherent distrust of the government. Where the hell did that go? Where did that go? Speaking of Adam Carolla, he has this line about his mom, who I gather was some kind of old-time hippie liberal person. And he said, you know, if you grew up with her around the 70s, you know, the enemy was, you know, organizations like the CIA or the FBI or the government generally. Today, she would silence any one of her hippies in deference to organizations like the CIA or the government generally. What happened to that healthy skepticism? What happened to it? So the Wall Street Journal picks up on what the New York Times picked up on today. 4 years ago this week, we were told that we would engage in 15 days to slow the spread. What followed was the unprecedented use of lockdown, school closings, and other sweeping measures. 4 years later, we know what many of us suspected then. None of those policies were successful, and many were gravely damaging. The COVID health benefits of mandatory lockdowns were tiny. Lockdowns in the U.S. prevented between 4,000 and 16,000 COVID deaths. In an average year, 37,000 Americans die from the flu, according to the CDC. Lockdowns also failed to reduce infections more than a trivial amount, in part because people voluntarily alter their behavior when a bad bug is in the air. Coercive government policies generated few benefits and massive costs. Public health agencies exacerbated the damage by failing to keep their heads and follow standard pandemic management protocols. Before 2020, it was recognized that communities respond best to pandemics when government measures are only minimally disruptive. During COVID, however, officials junked that practice by greenlighting restrictive practices and intentionally stoking fear. That response overlaid enormous economic, social, and educational and health harms on top of those caused by the virus. The harms are captured in part in excess deaths, the number beyond what would have been expected without a pandemic. Non-COVID excess deaths from lockdowns, the shutdowns of non-COVID medical care and societal panic are estimated at nearly 100,000. The number of lockdowns and societal disruption deaths since 2020 is likely around 400,000, as much as 100 times the number of COVID deaths the lockdowns prevented. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. My friends at the Midas Gold Group, The MAGRA veterans at the Midas Gold Group point out that the Federal Reserve note does not belong to you. It belongs to the Federal Reserve Bank. While the federal debt doesn't belong to the Federal Reserve Bank, it belongs to you. This is your wake-up call to what the Midas Gold Group veterans believe the central bank and government are trying to do, a controlled demolition of our current system with a central bank digital currency to take complete and utter control of our transactional freedoms. Protect yourself. Turn this wake-up call into a phone call to veteran-owned Midas Gold Group at 480-360-3000 or go to MidasGoldGroup.com. It's 480-360-3000 or MidasGoldGroup.com. Always faithful. Midas Gold Group. MAGA, I'm proud of it. MidasGoldGroup.com. Just one last thing on schools, if I might, and education and the left in this country. From the Wall Street Journal today. Perhaps the worst policy error were the prolonged school closings. Learning loss for children, especially in poor families, is already showing up in reduced standardized test scores. Do you remember Cruz Dyart, the head of the LA Teachers Union, who said there's no such thing as learning loss? Do you remember that? These losses will affect earnings for decades. By one estimate, today's children will lose $17 trillion in lifetime earnings owing to school closings. That's Eric Hanischik's research at Stanford. They may also suffer shorter life expectancy, which is linked to income and educational attainment. While school closings had no offsetting public health benefits, the attendant isolation led to massive increases in psychiatric illness, self-harm, obesity, and substance abuse. Healthy children were always at vanishingly small risk from COVID, and nearly all of them were infected at some point anyway, according to CDC data. Like a regressive tax, these harms were severest for lower-income and minority students. I just wanted that last word there on education because it goes into the whole pet peeve of mine that this didn't have to happen. We didn't have to be here. We didn't have to bow and genuflect before the teachers union. Do you remember how powerful the teachers union was? It changed CDC language on school closings. You think the CDC is powerful? Not until the NEA got to it and showed them what true power really was. They are the Kaiser Soze of public policy. And suffer the little children as a result. I still cannot get past the idea that the ladies of the View wanted to argue with Dr. Phil on this point. There is not a single piece of data that shows he is wrong and they are right. There is not a single piece of data that shows this was a good idea. Every piece of data shows what I just read to you from the Wall Street Journal. Every piece of data shows that. And as Heather MacDonald said, we knew all this. Certainly by June of 2020, we knew all this. We knew everything we needed to know. I kind of want to tie that point back to the thing I was saying in my monologue. People came to adore Big Brother. People came to adore him. At first, it was frightening. And then they enjoyed it. They liked it. They liked the paternalism. Now, those who study tyrannies throughout history, usually in the modern era, we're looking at things like communism or Nazism. You can appreciate, perhaps, how these movements get some or enough popular support to take power. You can begin to appreciate when you stoke fear and play off fear that there is going to be a strata of the population that is prone to fear and prone to the demagoguery of fear. But then the question becomes, how popular are these governments once they do take power, once they do take control? These are the kinds of things we're never really quite sure of. We're never really quite sure of whether these massive rallies in tyrannies, in whether it's the Muslim world or, you know, the rallies, you see pictures and videos, videography or film from the 1940s in Germany or any time in the Soviet Union or in China today, you can never really be sure if the people are there because of coercion or not, or, you know, their neighbors reporting on them or not. You can never be quite sure. But what you can be sure of about this country is there's a population that is no different than theirs. March 26th, young David, fighting for freedom. We're bringing out Mike Gallagher and Brandon Tatum and I. The three of us will be on stage. We'll have some other special guests. And we're going to talk to you about the issues that matter most in this election. And get your feedback as well. It's at Arizona Christian University. You can get tickets at 960thepatriot.com. Thanks to sponsorship by YRefi. They have dramatically cut the general admission price. We still have those tickets available as well as VIP tickets. 960thepatriot.com, March 26th. It'll be a ton of fun. I expect to see you there, as does David. Did you want to say anything more?
What more could possibly be said? I expect all of you to get tickets.
Yes. Or at least, okay. Well, not all of you, but...
All of you.
All of them. Okay.
We're packing this
place.
We're
packing the place. All right.
Fire Marshal's going to show up.
All right. Let's go to Rick. Hi, Rick.
Hello there, Seth.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, sir.
I'm calling about the Views interview with Dr. Phil.
Yeah.
But first, or kind of to set the context, all of the talk that you've been doing today about illness and mental illness and whatnot kind of reminded me that I may be developing CDO.
Oh.
Are you familiar with CDO?
I don't think so.
Well, it's like OCD, except it's in alphabetical order like it should be.
Oh.
Yeah. So my question is, in regards to the interview of Dr. Phil with The View, have you ever heard or talked to someone on the left who will actually agree with someone on the right about an issue?
Yes.
Okay. Well, in my experience, it has been pretty rare, and it almost seems like something I heard many years ago about something called an oppositional disorder.
Okay.
In other words, whatever you say, I'm going to say the opposite.
Okay.
And I was kind of reminded of that when you're talking about Justice Jackson not being able to define a woman.
Yeah.
And not understanding that the First Amendment, in fact, does hamstring the government. And, you know, George Orwell's observations and several things like that just kind of reminded me, or seems to me, that there seems to be kind of this middle disease of opposition that just refuses to, you know, agree with or give any leeway to President Trump or to someone on the right or someone in the mag, you know, a compromise. I remember J.D. Hayworth saying years ago in Washington, D.C., compromise with the Democrats means that you come to their position.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it seems like that sort of seems to be the situation after it. It's like there's just no leeway, no giving way. And I heard on the news that played a little while ago the Biden administration has, quote unquote, invited a group from Israel to come and discuss the situation with them, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, wait a minute, there is no compromise with Hamas. Mm-hmm. You cannot compromise with that.
Mm-hmm. You know what? Where my mind is kind of frozen on your first question, which is, have you found that you can, or vice versa, someone on the left can agree with you about an individual issue or vice versa?
Yeah.
And the reason I was seized by that was that when there's a key here that's important for us, I think. In my experience, when I have found that in earnest, and I interviewed a few of them during COVID and school closures, liberals that just were crazed by the school, that we wouldn't reopen the schools. They left the liberal talking points on that. They left the Gretchen Whitmers and the Gavin Newsoms on that. Jennifer Say is an example, by the way, of one of them. She was the woman who got fired at Levi's for promoting openings of schools. But there was a novelist, last name Young, I'm trying to remember her name. Anyway, there were a few I interviewed. And what's interesting to me about them is they're pretty much now on the right.
Yeah, yeah.
In other words, they put their toe in on one issue. Which is how I did it, by the way. I used to be on the left. I put my toe in on one issue. And you kind of get to know the movement a little bit more. You start surrounding yourself with the readings on that issue, and they're going to be coming from the conservative movement or whatever. The right side, let us say, if you're a left going right, could be the other way around. But in this case, left going right. You start seeing their journals. You start listening to their speakers. Those journals weigh in on other issues. Those speakers weigh in on other issues. And pretty soon, you can't help but hear conservatives on other issues. And or at least a conservative viewpoint on other issues, or at least a non-lefty viewpoint on other issues. And you soon realize it's not crazy to think that way.
Yeah, yeah.
You may not agree, but at least you will see there is some learning there.
Yeah.
You will see that Victor Davis Hanson is not a Neanderthal, that, Dennis Prager actually has a brain and is not a white nationalist. You know, you that starts dawning on you as you read them, as you listen to them.
Right.
Take anyone you want as an example of this. Those are just two whose pictures I see in the other room and came to mind. But you take the point that you once you leave this elitist view that you know it all and that any opposition to you has to be unenlightened. And if it's unenlightened, it's either unschooled or uneducated. That's elitism. Or it's racist and bigoted or white nationalist. That's race. You know, they have to dismiss it as racism or uneducated, unlearned, a non-thinking, a non-intellectual. And what it really comes down to is this line from Horace, you know, odi profanum vulgus. I hate the vulgar crowd. They hate the vulgar. And they dismiss anything not theirs as vulgar. We are the vulgars to be tolerated, not given the same and equal rights to play on the same and equal grounds that they do, because they're the smart ones. And once we get one crack at them, sometimes the game is over. And that's why they won't let us and don't want us to have that one crack. Portions of this show brought to you by our good friends at Y-Refi. Y-Refi is based here, headquartered here in Phoenix. Their offices are right on Chauncey Lane in North Phoenix. You can visit with them. If you do, you won't be asked to sign anything. You won't get a sales pitch. They leave that up to me. Y-Refi offers an investment in a secure and collateralized portfolio where you can earn up to a 10.25% fixed rate of return. That's right, 10.25% fixed rate of return. And it's not correlated to the stock market or the Federal Reserve. With YRefi, there are absolutely no fees. There is no attack on principal if you ever need your money back. Of course, you get a monthly statement with no surprises, and you can turn your income on or off or compound it or whatever you like. Give them a call at 888-YREFI-24. That's 888-YREFI-24. Or check them out at investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then REFY.com. I was just thinking a little bit about this whole media craze on the phrase bloodbath that Donald Trump used on Saturday, and how the media really ought to be ashamed of themselves for what they're doing. I would ask, I don't even know if journalism students learn the Journalist's Creed anymore. It's posted on a plaque at the National Press Club. It's from 1914 from the Missouri School of Journalism, written by a founder of it named Walter Williams. And it's really worth reading just to get a sense of how different journalism is now than the idea, the vaunted idea of what it used to be. I'll just give you the closing lines from it. I believe that the journalism which succeeds best and best deserves success fears God and honors man, is stoutly independent, unmoved by pride of opinion or greed of power, constructive, tolerant, but never careless, self-controlled, patient, always respectful of its readers, but always unafraid, quickly indignant at injustice, unswayed by the appeal of privilege or the clamor of the mob, seeks to give every man a chance, and as far as law and honest wage and recognition can make it so, an equal chance, is profoundly patriotic while sincerely promoting international goodwill, is a journalism of humanity, of and for today's world. Is any one of those, do any one of those beliefs, aspirations, do any one of them describe today's journalism? Any one of them? Sadly, no. Brandon Weikert coming right up.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.